You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
In a world where Lou objectifies all the women of Star Trek, we all cringe in unison.
Ew, seriously?
That is so gross.
You're bad, man.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Master Peace Society. I'm Chris from South Carolina.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. You still need the peace to do what I said.
Chris from South Carolina. What's the temperature like since the last time we spoke?
1 million degrees.
Still a million, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Because you've got another million people in there for the eclipse.
Solar eclipse, man.
That's funny. Oh, wait a second. You know, the eclipse is already gone. So how was it for you guys? I mean, did anybody get to go out and look at it?
Yeah, I'm currently blind. I'm looking for a Geordi visor because I put on my glasses.
Doc, do you leave the office so you can see it too? No. Are you guys even going to get it over there?
No, we don't get the eclipse.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it goes through an area here. Where I'm at, we only get a partial. 40 minutes to the west in Lincoln, it's a full complete. So,
Lou, can I suggest, although we've had a bit of temporal discrepancies here of it being in the past and in the future, but look, if it's 40 minutes down the road, certainly go 40 minutes down the road to get a total eclipse. Because we have had total eclipses in Europe. I believe there was one at just the turn of the millennium. I can't remember whether it was 99 or 2001, but it was around then. It went straight through Europe, you know, across France, Germany, Austria, over into, I think, Serbia, Croatia as well. And it's awesome. It really is very, very good. And certainly get to a total if you can, because a total is much better than a partial. I mean, partial goes a little bit dark, and it obviously depends how far away you are from the line of totality. Yeah, it's actually very, very impressive.
Well, I worked that day, and I can't get it off. So I guess around the time in question, I'll go toward one of the entrances and take a look out and see what it looks like. But so basically, if I understand it correctly, what's going to happen is it's going to turn from day to night. No,
it doesn't go dark.
But dark enough.
It goes dark enough, but it's not. It's one thing I think that you notice more than the light is the temperature drop, or at least that's what we experienced. So it still stays relatively light, and the way that it works as well is that, you know, as the moon is entirely in front of the sun, you end up blocking out, obviously, the sun, but then you actually have the ring of fire that goes around the edge as you see actually the part of the sun that you usually don't get to see. And that's actually pretty impressive as well. So it's a little bit like twilight, but I think the main thing that I noticed was just the shift in temperature that occurs. And this is assuming that it's a hot day, right? If we're talking about it being in the middle of winter and the sun's behind a cloud anyway, it's probably not going to make that much difference.
I was going to say, yeah, what if it's a cloudy day? It just kind of get darker, but you're not going to see anything.
No. One really cool thing is that if you're like around something that is able to refract the sunlight, so like if you're underneath a tree, what you will find is that what you see hitting the ground will actually be an image of the sun. So you don't usually consider it like that, right? You know, when you're underneath a tree and you see that there's like the branches and then you have the things peering through, you don't think, oh, they're little circles that are on top of each other. But it is, that is really what is happening. When you do have the eclipse, what you'll find that lands on the ground will be little pictures of the sun. So you'll see either crescents or during totality, you see the little rings that appear on the ground, and that's really cool.
Oh, neat. Okay, well, here in Omaha, it's forecast for Monday is calling for partly cloudy with some possible rain. So, boy, I hope all these people that are going crazy about this event aren't disappointed.
There's one coming up in a couple of years, though, in the U.S., right? I think there's one that's going west to east, and there's one that comes back kind of north to south, I think, in I don't know whether it's like 4 or 5 years, something like that.
How can they? Boy, that tell you, it takes a special brain to be able to figure that out.
Huh. What do you mean?
I mean, how can they forecast or, you know the way of all these stars are going to align years from now?
Well, you only need, okay, so it's only a three-body problem. There's us, there's the sun, there's the moon. And we're quite good at being able to just play that forward. Hmm. So you can kind of tell. And actually, you can go, I believe it's NASA. They actually have the NASA website that just tells you all of the eclipses that are going to be due between now and in like the infinity of time. There's actually a pretty cool website out there.
All right, well, you find that out and send it to us, okay? All right, so Chris is back again for the Masterpiece Society. This is the one you actually wanted. So what's up?
This is definitely the one I actually wanted. And the synopsis for this episode is, the Enterprise tries to save a perfect colony from destruction, but the Assistance causes a damage of its own. This is the 13th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is February 10th, 1992. It's written by James Caan and Adam Belanoff, and the teleplay is by Michael Piller. And it's directed by Winrick Colby. Guest stars include John Snyder as Aaron Connor, Day Young as Hannah Bates, Ron Canada as Martin Benbeck, and Sheila Franklin as unnamed ensign, and unnamed actor as Masterpiece Society background actors.
A few of them. I thought John Snyder was Bo Duke.
You got me, man. I'm not a big Dukes of Hazzard fan. Surprisingly enough.
Doc, do you know the Dukes of Hazzard?
No. I think I might have seen it once when I was like 4, but I don't wouldn't be able to tell you anything about it. Other than, didn't like the original actors disappear due to contract disputes, and then the cousins or something took over from like series 3?
Yeah.
I seem to remember that there was that story.
Yeah, something to that extent. So, okay, here we go. So we have some Yulians on board.
Very good.
If anybody listened to last week's show, I had the wrong notes on. Well, I've got them on again. The wrong notes. But this time I did it on purpose. But as I mentioned last week, oh, hey, what do we got here?
What's that, Daddy?
This is the podcast that I'm working on right now. That's Lou. Can you say hey, Lou?
Or you could say hi to yourself.
Lou's gone. He's pointing at you, buddy.
He's looking at us.
That's
looking
you. Daddy. Is that Daddy there? Is this Daddy here? He looks like Daddy. Who's she?
Can you say the doc is the best?
Doc is the best.
Well, this is the Doctor. This is Doc.
I'm just a symbol. Yeah,
that's him. You're
just his white frame of a human.
That's right. His head isn't even connected to his body. That's really strange, Doc. You need to get that worked on.
I'll get it looked at.
Sorry for the interruption.
Hey, that stays too. So as I mentioned last week, we're tracking a stellar core fragment that Doc will be explaining if he can, because he was going to look it up from last time.
I didn't look it up, but I'm only going to assume here, and I'm going to go out on the limb, but this is just a fragment of a core of a slot star. What's so confusing? Oh,
okay. Are we not in a star? The star?
Yeah, the sun's a star.
That's why that core fragment was so bright.
So when the sun eventually kind of blows up, actually, one thing maybe was a bit confusing. I don't know why it was completely spherical. I would have thought that maybe it was going to be a bit more ruggedy. But it's, anything that has a significant amount of mass is going to be made spherical just by its own gravity anyway. So maybe that's a bit of a, maybe it's realistic. So I think really what they're saying here is that sun explodes. This is a bit from the sun that was left over.
So how can they get so close to it?
They're not that close, right? And in descent, they fly into the sun's corona, so it's not exactly. We have been here before, but we will be here again.
Okay. All right. So this stellar core fragment approaches Moab for a human colony on a deserted planet. Hey, sound familiar? And. Geordi believes that they know the Enterprise is there, but is refusing to answer. So you told us what the stellar core fragment is.
By the way, we didn't do the what are our thoughts on this episode bit.
Oh,
because I think this episode really, 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 really sucks, and I hate it.
And I completely disagree with you, Doc.
Okay,
like,
good.
On another good. Level of disagree.
I'm kind of in the middle. I don't think it really sucks. I think it's an interesting question that
it's not an interesting question.
No, because this whole planet is genetically manipulated, genetically created. They have each little individual pieces to their puzzle, and right. By the end of this episode, lots of pieces are missing from their puzzle. And right. How are they supposed to go on if certain people that were supposed to be doing certain things are no longer there?
Okay, the only statement you've made there is that the people, the founding fathers of this place, were stupid. That's the only statement that you're making.
No, come on, Doc. Okay, so essentially, our ship happens upon New Atlantis, or Walden 2, if you want to put it in those words, or any other utopia. So the reason that I love this episode is because of the kind of meta idea of the fact that our ship and Star Trek in general is in itself a utopia, right?
Yep.
I think none of us would disagree that this idea of the future is definitely a utopia where everybody gets to do what they want and everybody has meaning in their life and they seed in different ideas to add agitation and things that we need for story. But in general, the lifestyle of these people, utopia. They run into another utopia that is, in Picard's mind at least, a lesser utopia, which is a cool idea. But then they have to deal with, what if we could destroy a utopia with our own utopia? And I find that extremely interesting insofar as different philosophies will affect one another and change one another if they interact. if you have them solely to themselves, maybe Christianity would work. Maybe Buddhism by itself without any outside influence, maybe it would work. But because you have to interact with others consistently, those things butt heads. So the reason that I love this episode is because it sends me down about 1,000 different trails. I start thinking about Walden too. I start thinking about what would make a utopia. I start thinking about what is the Star Trek utopia and why is it better than this utopia. So there's like 1,000 questions that pop up in my head. And this is, in my mind, what's good about Star Trek. You want to start chasing down little tiny fragments of ideas that the good writers of these episodes have kind of seeded in here, so that you can better understand your own society because of the societies that you viewed on stage or on the episode. So, Doc, while you may be right in a strictly plot sense that this is not a great episode insofar as it's kind of talky and preachy a little bit,
it's not preachy enough.
Okay, fair. Fair point. Maybe it doesn't come to a conclusive, definitive, this is it, right? And so it leaves you questioning a little bit. But I kind of like that, too, about Star Trek. I love this episode for those things.
So the thing is, I'm not willing to accept that the society you have here is a utopia in terms of the Masterpiece Society. You have a colony that is going to be wiped out within days. And then you offer help for the colony, and then that interaction causes a problem. Now, it happens to be genetically engineered humans. It could have easily been aliens. It could have easily been, a lower form of life. It could have easily, frankly, been the fact that we've done this episode before in the Ensigns of Command, and they didn't want to leave either. I don't think that the fact that this episode takes a kind of a detour into pseudo-philosophical nonsense about whether or not it's better to engineer a society under which you will fulfill your potential versus a society under which you're free in order not to, I honestly don't buy it. Or at least what I mean is that I think that there are correct answers to that question that you can arrive at relatively quickly, probably by the age of 5. So I'm not really engaged or entertaining the alternative proposal that they put on the table. And the bit that winds me up, a lot of the guys on the planet wind me up, in particular the leader, who seems to be one of the worst leaders you could possibly have found, genetically engineered or not. When they start talking about everything was okay until you guys got here, now if you could leave, it'll be okay as well, is a bit like claiming that everything was okay as you were murdering your wife until the police got here, and if the police could just leave, things would be back to normal.
I think that's not fair. Harm. There's no harm happening in this society before they get here. So it's nothing like the murdering your wife. So this is more like... There are tons of these episodes in TOS where Kirk goes down to the planet. He sees a group of people who are completely happy, completely satisfied in their world, but he's not satisfied for them. This is kind of all over again.
I actually think in many cases in the original series, it's almost done better. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious about murdering your wife, but roll over instead from murdering your wife and put it down to having slaves, and you've basically got this episode. You have people that have no freedom, that are confined within a system that they can't get out of, and you're asking, once you've run into them and you've offered them a glimpse of what's outside, you're asking them to basically stay put, and as long as the police are happy to turn the blind eye, you don't have a problem.
I would argue against the slave thing too, though, because they're genetically designed to be really good at a certain thing, so they don't ever have to question whether they're good at a thing or not. Like, you were completely genetically set up to be a pianist. You don't have to question whether you're good at that or not. You don't have to do anything else. Like, that is what you're good at. That is what your passion is. We've developed that in you genetically. So the scientist woman, who was genetically set up to be a scientist, obviously wants to get off of there because she sees, oh, there is science beyond the science that is here. Like, I can actually explore new things and do. So that is actually a freedom for her. But the diplomat guy, there's no freedom for him in joining a starship.
No, actually, let me also. Like, you
he
mentioned
was
something
built to be the leader of that society.
So you mentioned something about how these people are genetically engineered to be clean. I think there are two things you mentioned, and I don't necessarily think that they're correlated. And I don't think they mention in the episode per se that both of them have to be true. And one is that you could be genetically engineered to enjoy being a pianist, and then you can be genetically engineered to be a good pianist. And I don't necessarily think these two, well, I don't buy the premise that you can kind of be created so that you can hit both of them. And I don't necessarily believe that what we're seeing here is a society on which they've managed to achieve that peak. I very much see the society as, hey, we've got a bunch of frankly, we've got a bunch of kind of, you know, upper class dudes that happen to have been inbred, and isn't it great that we've managed to find, you know, three Ivy League professors and the guy that won the Super Bowl, and yeah, that'll probably do us in terms of a good genetic mix. So I don't, not only do I not buy that they've managed to create superhumans, I also don't really buy that it's even possible for you to distill kind of, you know, enthusiasm for a subject and ability at a subject at that level within a genetic, you know, genetic choice.
Well, I think that you can through the structure of the society. So bear with me for a second while I dive
into
it.
Then you're just talking about the lack of freedom at that point.
But, I mean, maybe, yes. But I work a lot with children of poverty, okay? And in their first 6 or 7 years, they have no clue that they're impoverished. And they live relatively happy lives. Now, they don't realize that they could be playing Xbox inside with complete air conditioning, or, you know, have the Richie Rich bowling alley in their, you know, next room from them that they could be even more elated with. They just know that they love going outside and playing with the sticks and having sword fights and building forts out of garbage. They have no clue, right? And so because they have no clue, they're completely satisfied with their surroundings. And so that's kind of my argument here. It's not that they're in any way slaves. They're completely free to chase after whatever they were designed for. Now, I assume that that brings them joy, and you're right that that is not necessarily explicit in the episode, but I assume that that brings them joy because that's all they show us. The diplomat is joyful in his diplomacy. The scientist is joyful in her sciencing. Now, she realizes it could be more, but until she realizes it, she's completely happy where she is, doing science where she is. And so I don't think that we can say what you're saying either. So maybe we're both going too far in the opposite directions, and it's really somewhere in the middle. But I certainly think that these people are not slaves, that they are
okay, let me
parts
let me
of society, and they feel like they're purposeful in the society that they're
sure,
in.
Sure, sure. So we're not slaves in the sense that, you know, you're a house that you've managed to lock people up into and everyone feels happy, you know, cleaning the toilets or whatever. But we've probably just about gone to the state that we're looking at a North Korea here, which is a very insular country. Everything is set up for you. No freedom to do anything other than the prescribed script. And frankly, you're not actually that good at it anyway. You know, you've got this genetically engineered scientist who seems to be at least 200 years behind on the cutting edge science. Well, you know, how great can they really fundamentally be? And I'd probably suggest that the, you know, the diplomats, the artists, the musicians, whoever they happen to have in their society, I can't buy this idea that these guys are inherently going to be superior or even happier in their little role, which is why by the end of it, everyone leaves, right? A lot of people leave. And then you get into this question about, oh, well, you know, isn't there a moral discussion about whether or not, you know, you're doing more harm to the system by leaving? At which point, really, at that point, the argument is, do you have free will as an individual, or do you have responsibility to society?
And which again, leads to a great question, though.
Well, I think that question is pretty much answered very quickly. And I think that, yeah, it is a nice question to have, but we're not bees, right? We are human beings, and we do have human rights, and the rights are that, yes, you might feel a responsibility. You might feel a responsibility not to run away from your village, but you can't be trapped there forever. It is your choice.
But no like one has... Star Trek, it leads to that anthropological question that is not always answered easily. Yes, this particular one might be for you, but it's not always in every way. And we're in the middle of a good discussion. Here come all my kids. Mm-hmm. Hello, Francis.
Hi.
Hello, Ada.
Hi, Daddy. You didn't know me.
All right, here's what we need for the sound bite. We need you all in unison to say, the doc is the best.
The doc is the best.
All right, so I'm going to say it. 3, 2, 1, and then you're going to say it. You ready? 3, 2, 1.
The doc is the best.
The doc is the best.
They're not in unison at all. Anyway.
You have to explain unison to them. How about all at the together. Same time?
At the same time. You ready? Go.
Doc is best.
best, yes.
All right. We got to go back to work, guys. You got to go because the doc is in England and it is
I'm not the
way
doc.
Past his bedtime. Good night. Bye. Close the door behind you. Go. Go.
Oh, you forgot to tell him that the doc is the one whose head isn't connected to his body.
I want them to associate you with the doc forevermore.
So I'm the doc now, huh? Okay, so, Lou. Where was I? Because I really don't know.
We're still at the teaser, Lou.
Oh, are we still at the teaser? Did we not even get to the teaser with this whole big thing?
No, but that's fine. I love that. This is what we need. So the planet reluctantly responds to the warning about the stellar core fragment, but doesn't like the idea of evacuating the planet either. But, you know, it's going to be destroyed unless they do something. So I like Martin, the guy standing behind Aaron, played by Ron
good.
Canada.
He is good.
I mean, the whole time him and Picard are talking... Your eyes are just on him, pacing back and forth, and every little thing he hears, he goes, catches his attention. So I was just saying that my favorite is during the teaser when he's talking to Aaron with Ron Canada's character of Martin pacing back and forth, and that was pretty awesome. My eyes were glued on him.
Well, he's very clearly hovering, and he's very clearly he is a literal, I'm not going to say like guardian angel on the shoulder, but he is clearly a part of the chorus of advice that the leader is taking.
Right. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on Martin?
I love the actor. I think that... I think that this episode doesn't give him a whole lot to do, and what he does do is... I don't know that it serves the story as well as it could. He seems like the doomsayer, and I feel like if they're really elite and they're ahead, that you should have a little less of him being so doomsay and more like purification kind of thing. Like, we're pure, we don't need to bring in people who are going to make us impure.
Although, in a sense, he was right. In the end, he was right. These people are going to, you know, destroy our society.
He's not right.
Well, maybe because, not, but that's what he believes.
Yeah, but, I mean, I really didn't... One of the things I dislike the most about this episode is the, like, Picard monologue at the end, when he says, yes, you know, after all, maybe, you know, our interactions will prove as deadly as any stellar core fragment. We're being very melodramatic there, right?
I don't know, though.
No.
Are we really? No, we are.
Of course we are. It's like, you know, the equivalent here is saying that, you know, hey, yeah, you know, Steve might have a bad day at work and he might get a little bit stressed by it, but maybe that day at work is as damaging as being shot through the head with a rifle. No, these things are different.
Hold on.
They are different, however, to their society, losing these people, it's the same as my last Lutrek show I ever recorded. Brian and I were talking about how we both worked at Domino's Pizza and never knew about it the whole time. So we were swapping Dominion Pizza is what we called it. And we were swapping stories, and then I never got to talk to him again because he died. And now, because of that, it upended my entire podcast until we started. Well, we...
So the culture of the Lutrek show was dead.
It's
completely destroyed by losing an essential member. Which is kind of the point that I was trying to make earlier before my kids ran in with the anthropology illusion. Yes, okay, so Doc, I kind of see your point to some extent. Like this, it is a little over dramatization, but I think that the point they're trying to get to is a valid point that we need to make. Do we, with all of our technology and everything we have, going into these farthest reaches of the world that have never been touched by the modern world, does it ruin culture? Does it destroy something special and something good? Which is the question of the episode. Picard's an anthropologist at heart, so of course his character is going to say, this is terrifying, that we could go in and that we could completely, even though we think what we're doing is good and what they're doing might be a little backwards and maybe retarding the growth of what they could be, maybe it's bad because it's destroying what was a really good working culture that could have, in thousands of years, turned into something even better than what we have. And so I think that that's where this episode is going and not in this.
Because I think that there are two issues there. The first thing is, that, I mean, what you're really talking about there is that, you know, Star Trek has the prime directive, and there is this idea that we don't necessarily know best for alien cultures, and who are we to come in and play God, right? And we have countless episodes about prime directive and like non-interference, and even, you know, even this stuff on Enterprise where they were going ahead and effectively coming in very naive and thinking they could solve the world's problems. You know, that does exist, and I think that's a valid story, right? It really is a valid story, and I always consider prime directive to be, you know, the stories there are basically about colonization in my mind at least, and you know, how should you go through the world? Is it right to just trample on societies out there and, you know, you basically culturally take over everywhere? I see this very much like, you know, what happened with the Europeans heading over to the US, heading over to Australia, the New World, and they basically just set up their own, and the cultures that used to live there prior to that pretty much wiped out. And I think it's valid questions, and us basically just turning up on other planets and saying, hey, you're now all Christians and here's your McDonald's. That's not necessarily a good thing to do. But in this episode, they say, look, these guys are humans. And as soon as you say that these guys are humans, in my mind, the story becomes about they have to have the same rights as anyone that lives under the system or within the Federation. And I can't divorce these guys from being, you know, people under the Federation's, not control, but under their kind of laws. And at that point, they become entitled to the freedoms, and you know, the rest of the Federation and humans are entitled to. And at that point, I find it very difficult to really square this idea that, you know, surely it's okay that we've got these humans on the side that are living this weird and wonderful culture that breaks most of their human rights because it's nice and we should respect different cultures. But I don't feel that that's appropriate given that they are human. And I would always suggest that really when in Star Trek people are talking about humans, what they're really saying is that they're members of your country, and you wouldn't allow members of your country basically to live a parallel life whereby the basic rights that they have under your constitution or whatever laws of the land were being violated. And that's, you know, if they want a prime directive story, then let them have one. But I feel that when they bring in that these guys are humans, I just don't see. I think it's becomes too black and white.
I would argue, though, until the 32-minute mark, no rights were being violated. insofar as nobody wanted to leave until that mark. And so the only time that a human right was violated was when the woman wanted to leave, and they were like, but if she leaves, she takes away an essential part of our community, and we die, effectively.
Sure, and I think that it's a valid discussion for the guys on the planet to have, the Masterpiece Society to have. If they want to have their discussion about the choice that the scientist is making is dooming or harming the wider society at a whole, then I think that's a valid discussion. And frankly, right, we have analogies of this going on everywhere. You might have, you might have a mine in town that most of the kids leave to go to the big city, and it's turned into a ghost town. You might find that people are leaving to the mainland in some of the coastal regions or some of the island communities to destroy a certain way of life. That's a perfectly valid discussion to have, but I feel like the discussion needs to be within that individual's right to weigh their own freedom against their responsibilities to society.
I guess what I don't understand is what your issue with this episode is then, because that's kind of what happens.
It's not, the question should never be whether or not the Enterprise respects the right of the individual to walk away. So the individual has the right to walk away. If this was framed in a way of how does the person make the choice to walk away, and they weigh up their commitments versus their freedom, then that's fine. The way that they try to shut this down, almost to suggest that Picard should make the choice for them, I think that's not even on the cards as far as
I feel like. Okay, so I guess we kind of saw this two very different ways, because I saw this as Picard had no other choice but to take them.
Yeah,
but he was
that's true.
So he knew that he had no other choice, but his whole thing was, I just want you to think about it and make sure that you're sure, because if you leave, like, I'm not trying to take away your right. You have every right to come aboard the ship. You have every right to leave. And I feel like he makes that statement clear, and the episode makes that statement clear. But the issue comes with him looking back and saying, there's nuance to this. Yes, you deserve the human right to leave. Everyone here deserves the human right to leave. But I think you should fully weigh your decisions. And so ultimately, this episode comes down to communities and culture are important, and you should always weigh whether you are willing to get rid of that or not, whether you're willing to let go of that or not. So that's kind of what I took away from it, and I felt like it was really powerful. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like you're kind of simplifying it and then making it.
I feel like they spend more time debating whether or not Picard should allow these guys to have what I would consider to be their basic human right, and they spend more time on that than on the discussion as to whether or not these guys are doing anything to harm society by leaving. So I feel like there could have been a good story, but at no point do I get much of an internal narrative of the scientist lady about, she doesn't feel torn at any point. She doesn't feel that there's a choice here, per se. I don't feel that, She pushes back when they say, look, we'll come back in 6 months. And she'll say, look, you're just going to harass me for 6 months. I don't feel like she's torn. And as a result, I don't buy into any of the decisions that she's making are particularly hard. And as a result, I kind of felt that the way that the story was went, it becomes much more about whether or not, there was more discussion between Picard and the leader about whether or not he was going to grant them asylum or not, than there was between the people on the planet about whether it was right to leave or not. And although I accept what you're saying, is that if the focus was on freedom to leave versus the damage you do to your society, discussed from those members of the society, that would be great. But I just feel that that's not what gets presented.
Yeah, I mean, I could sort of see that. I feel like it's there. It's definitely there in the dialogue, unless I'm just crazy and reading it into the dialogue because I liked most of the episode and wanted to put it there. But I'd have to go back and watch one more time during our discussion to decide that. But that's interesting. And fair. I think you're fair on that. I think that's... You could read it both ways.
All right. So, we're still at the teaser. No,
so <don't. laughs> we're just going to let you blaze through the rest of the episode.
So they finally allow Enterprise personnel to beam down, and of course Deanna is one of them because we need the ship's counselor so she can, you know, kind of get it on with Aaron. So I guess, is this a second Deanna episode?
No. Well, back-to-back Deanna.
This is back-to-back not her, Deanna. This is not her episode. She's not the main focus of this episode. However...
Of course she is.
No, she's definitely not. The main
one of the focuses.
I think that the main... Well... Okay, fair. Fair point. Because she outlines the leader's desire to maybe kill this community as well. So we have on the two sides the scientist and the leader, who are the pillars of the argument. You have, we should maintain the culture and keep it going, or I'm ready to leave this culture because I feel like we're not fully developing what we could potentially be. And so I find that very intriguing and interesting, and they parallel that throughout the whole episode, which is good, I think.
Okay. But Sheena does have a bad, intimate relationship with the leader of this colony, even though she knows she's not supposed to, she shouldn't have, but oops. Bum, 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 bum. Maybe it's because she still has flashbacks of what happened to her last time.
But she sleeps with him. He lives.
Yes.
That's very cool. If you've listened to the recent 10 Forward episode that Dan and I did, Deanna has a pretty good track record of people she sleeps with who remain alive. Data is not. Deanna does.
So Chris, let me just... I did listen to that. Which one of you guys was arguing that Worf and Esri never got it together? I mean, what?
I argued that they didn't get together. I don't think
What do you mean?
They got it together. Of course they did. They got it together in, was it Penumbra? I think it was like the last all but four or so episodes.
Okay, of DS9. I have only watched DS9 all the way through one time. I'm currently on my second viewing, sometimes third, fourth, and fifth viewing on some episodes. I don't remember a ton of the seventh season episodes. When we get to the seventh season and we get to that episode, if you guys are right, I'll fully admit it. If you're going to scream from the hilltops how crazy you guys are.
So Worf and Esri both get captured by the Breen. They get thrown into a cell together. They then have Nuki. They then openly discuss the fact that they had Nuki and whether or not they should get married again. And then Esri basically said, hey, it was a one-night Nuki thing. I'm not getting married to you again. I've already, ridden this pony.
If you're right, mm-hmm. I'm gonna definitely tout it from the hilltops. I'm not back there yet. Not in that place.
Get your boots on. You're going to need them to get up that mountain.
I'm ready to admit when I'm wrong. I'm a teacher. I'm wrong a lot. People call me on it. I admit it when I'm wrong. So when we get there, I'll admit it. But I'm not ready to admit it here because I haven't seen that episode again.
All right. So these people are fascinated with the transporter.
Fascinated.
I mean, does that make any sense?
It does, because they haven't reached that. It's a highlight of they've been in this isolated society for so long, since apparently before transporter technology, way back in the Enterprise days, right at the very beginning of the Enterprise days. And they just don't know about it. It's brand new to them, and they've never developed it because they never had a need for it.
I suppose not. But they are interested in it. So they said 2 centuries ago, so Earthlings from 200 years ago came to this planet to create their masterpiece race. And these people are genetically created to do what they are doing. I guess it was before all the eugenics war and genetic manipulation and Khan, right?
No, that was like 1997.
1996, right.
So they didn't learn anything from Khan. It just seems like these people happen to work out better. Or what am I missing here?
You don't know. You know, right? The Enterprise turns up. We don't know there hasn't been like 400 years of genocide on this planet.
Fair.
You know, this planet now has a couple of hundred people, or a couple of thousand people on it. There were like 60 million just prior to when we landed.
Living in that one bubble. I guess, okay, so that's the nuclear winter that caused them to have to build the bubble, or they built the bubble in preparation for the nuclear winter to commit the genocide. God, you're making me hate this episode, Doc, and I hate you for it.
Hold on. I thought the planet was the way the planet is. They just built this bubble around it to live in it.
That could be their story. That could be their narrative. Fake news. Come on, Lou.
That could be. I actually thought their society began in this bubble because they wanted to be.
That's the story they present here.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Does anyone have, I mean, in a world of like millions of planets, anyone have any aspirations above living in a bubble?
No. No. I get that part too. That's part of my notes too, that these people are very happy to live in this bubble.
And
nobody goes on vacation. Nobody goes to the other side of the planet.
And what's this nonsense about hey, nice bubble you have here. Do you think you can move it to the other side? No, can't possibly move the bubble. It's very fragile. Why is it so for a leader who's genetically engineered to be kind of the greatest leader in the world, he seems incapable of leading. And why can't he just take his society with him? Why can't they say, look, you know, we're going to be dead in 3 days. I'm going to offer you a little bit of, you know, salvation. We're going to have to move across the road to a new bubble. Where's the problem in that? I mean, Troy says that, or maybe I'm oversimplifying things a little, but I think that the way that they present the society as being so minutely balanced, and if anything were to happen, which apparently even includes, you know, 20-odd people wanting to go on a bus ride, and they happen to end up in a bit of an accident that kills them all, apparently that wipes out society. The founding fathers of this particular society did not have a good plan.
Or they read Walden 2 and the New Atlantis, and they said, hey, we could do that, and we have this genetic modification. We could really, really do that. We could make a person genetically perfect at taking out the garbage.
Done. Actually, quick question. What is... Other than kind of like offending me, what's the purpose of having them genetically modified or genetically engineered?
Yeah, see, that part I don't really understand. I feel like what they're trying to... what they're trying to get at in this episode is kind of that perfect society built through specific behavioral reasoning, if that makes sense, like the whole deal with like the Walden 2 kind of thing. It's what it seemed like to me, and the genetic thing just kind of diluted it almost, or made it weird.
Earth, we've put together a fair amount of societies that have kind of segregated people into various, you know, castes, and have identified characteristics from a very young age and pushed people in certain directions, right? I mean, you can look at, if you want to look at things like, you know, academic performance or certainly sports performance behind the Iron Curtain, and how, or in China, how absolutely focused they are to deliver a certain outcome. We do have systems in place that can deliver that, and you can make the argument that you're achieving your potential. You can be measured at age 5, and you can exist within a system that's going to absolutely guarantee that the best swimmers or the best high jumpers or the best gymnasts are going to have the framework on which they can fulfill their potential. Well, why does genetic engineering come into it? I don't feel that it adds much. I mean, it gives Geordi the ability to turn around and say, look, you guys are genetic, you guys are better, but you've missed out the, you know, the mother of invention. And I think that's a valid argument to make.
But I almost feel like that's the only reason for it, is because it gives you a good, it gives you the type of problem you need in storytelling. You have this ready-made guy who's like the picture-esque poster boy for not needing eugenics, just needing innovation, right? And then you have here on the other side this group of people who are like, we are going to practice extreme eugenics and not ever need innovation. And they become a society that is stone cold, stalwart, stuck in a time. Now, they're all happy there when they don't realize that there's all this other stuff out there. There's all this innovation and challenge. But that's the point of this episode, right? And your argument is, why do we care that that's destroyed?
Yeah.
Right? That the bubble, why do we care that the bubble is destroyed? And my argument is, I think you should kind of care about bubbles.
They
don't have time to make a new bubble.
I almost feel like the argument that the, you know, almost, and it's just, it's only half the episode, right? But have they just put the first half of the episode on as the full episode and basically had, hey, you know, we think we're superior to you guys. We think we're genetically modified. We try to be happy, and then they're going to die, and they realize that, you know, through necessity, we're in a position to be able to save them, and we can rub it in their nose and be slightly smug in a kind of like season one territory of a, hey, you didn't need this, but we needed this because we had a blind dude that we weren't prepared to kill, you know, in the womb. That's a perfectly reasonable story, I feel. I mean, you could tell that. You can wrap it up in a way, and you can have some nuance in there that's, that might be a bit deeper than they've managed to put into the first 22 minutes. But then the question about you know, free will versus having plans laid out for you and achieving your full potential, it's not really dug into. They don't really dig into which one is preferable than the other, and I don't really think they dig into much about the pros and cons of, you know, working for society versus your own free will to leave it. And I just feel like they don't really have enough here to really justify much more than really just the lightest of you know, glances into some questions that are probably interesting to ask, but it's not really looked into as much as they needed to.
See, I don't feel like in 45 minutes we should ever expect Star Trek to answer a question. Mm. Now, there are times where they kind of try to, where they kind of try to speak to a potential answer, but this is kind of what I love about Trek, is that they'll throw out there these ideas. So we have this idea of eugenics, and they throw out a pretty solid rebuttal to eugenics, right? So the eugenics part of what you're doing is wrong. The culture side of what you're doing is not necessarily wrong. Like, when you're building a culture where people have a distinct purpose that they know about and they never have to question, that's an interesting idea, and I don't know that we just should destroy that. But you have some other ideas that are kind of tied in with that that are bad, that you need to think about, that you need to rethink, and that maybe you need to get away from.
I mean, personally, I would have been extremely happy to have a philosophical discussion between Picard and others about whether or not the, you know, whether or not the certain members of society not reaching their full potential and feeling lost is a price worth paying to allow others to have the experience of discovering.
So if they had like a part of the episode where some of the people from the starship were like, hey, they tested me and I would fit in really well here in their society, and that would make me much more comfortable and happy. And then there are people from their society saying, hey, I would rather be this, and I would rather explore new things, and I'm stuck and stifled here in this place where I'm supposed to. That'd be interesting. I mean, I agree. I mean, this episode could probably be better, Doc. I'm not going to disagree with you.
Well, I almost feel like you could have made it like a big four-part episode. And I just think it's... Ooh,
you like this episode so much you want four parts of it?
Well, what I mean is that you're touching on a lot of things in a very, very limited way.
Yeah.
And when you basically say, genetic engineering, makes you think, if that's the only statement you're making, then the answer is, no, not really. And then if the only statement you make is, hey, we should probably kill disabled people while they're still in the room, eh? The answer to that is, no, no, you probably shouldn't. I mean, unless you're going to propose a more nuanced argument, when you're dealing in such broad strokes, you're batting it back as, no, I think you're wrong. And, hey, we shouldn't let this woman leave her job because she's the only one that knows how to work the photocopier, so we should keep her here forever. The answer to that is, no. No, you don't have the right to do that. So it's so broad stroked that...
But I think that this episode agrees with you. I think that it says, hey, you can't keep the copier here. We're taking her either now or in 6 months. Like, she deserves better than what you can offer her here. You can try to, like, offer her better pay or offer her a better position or somehow show her that you can give her the stretching room in 6 months, but we're taking her in 6 months if you can't, like, if she still wants to go. We're not letting you keep her forever. Your argument would be that's weak?
No, I hear you. And I think what you're saying about the episode is much better than my experience whilst watching the episode. And I keep coming back. I've got Memory Alpha here, and they've got the final words of the episodes. But in the end, we may have proved just as dangerous to that colony as any core fragment could ever have been. Right. Absolute BS.
No, and they might have destroyed it completely.
No, the only way they might have been as dangerous if they had actually started nuking the thing from orbit. You know, coming in with ideas I just don't think there's no moral equivalence here between letting a society be vaporized as a stellar fragment hits them versus going down and just allowing people to be exposed to things or having those people exposed to things and wishing to come and seek asylum. I just don't see any equivalence there.
So, I don't know, but if you remove Tiger Woods' arms, he's not going to be able to play golf as well. That's what their equivalent is.
Well, maybe, but my buddy works...
Arms aren't humans. They don't have human rights.
My buddy works out in Yap, a series of islands in Micronesia, and these people really love the society that they have. Now, I'm sure there are some people that don't love the society and would love to leave, and this is not a complete equivalency, right? Because some of the people do leave, and it doesn't destroy the society completely, right? But I think that in 45 minutes, you have to create a situation like this and a dynamic like this because you only have 45 minutes. So you create this in this way so that you can have real stakes, essentially. But the consideration that you should have is still that this is a culture that was flourishing, that was growing. Maybe not flourishing. Flourishing might be hyperbole for this particular group of people. But they were definitely growing. They were learning. They were experiencing life in a good way, right? And for a lot of those people, it was enough. For 56 of those people, it was not enough. And I don't remember how many people they said were there total. I'm sure they said it at some point in the episode. So we could probably come up with a percentage of the people that left, and maybe it's half, right? But for half the people, that society, that culture was working, right? And then you have these people that bring in this whole idea and this whole culture and this whole society that doesn't work for the first 50%, but totally works for the second 50%. But that first 50% cannot live. They cannot survive without the other 50%. So I think that it is important to make a note that, hey, what we did might have been good for half the people here, but the other half, they're going to die in decrepitude because they can't function without their other parts. They think they are.
And
so, this is where, Lou, what you just said is very important. You're taking away their arms, you're taking away their toes, you're taking away their nose, so they can't smell the wind, they can't swing the golf club, they can't dig their toes in to make a good shot anymore, and they're never gonna golf again, right?
Not in this case.
Well,
if he had said, you know, we're taking him anyway, but he gave them the choice to stay or go.
You have to give them the choice to go, though, I think.
Well, yeah,
and I don't think that's ever a question in the episode. I think that from the get-go, it's like, well, we got it. Somebody says it. Picard makes kind of a statement, and I think it might be Riker who says, we have to offer. We don't have a choice. We have to give them asylum. Yeah. Whether you think it's good or not, in this particular instant, we have to give them asylum because our culture, our society as a whole has decided that the only justice is that the individual have the freedom to express himself as he will. And so if these people are in a society and they're being limited, we have the capacity to take them out of that limiting situation.
Yes.
That's just justice here where we are. I don't know.
I wish they'd go back to this episode later and say, let's see what happens. Because
did the
we don't
society
know what's
die?
Happen.
Did it actually continue to function it. And grow? I think that it's definitely for the problem of the episode, for the ratcheting of the tension, that they're like, oh, you can't take them away, and that they would actually be okay. And I think that would be a cool thing to come back to later and have a whole other discussion about. But like I said, with the allusion that I was making to the people in Yap, if you just go in there and you take out large portions of their culture and you leave behind your like the idea and the remnant of yourself, then at some point you destroy that society with what could be or what could have been. And I think that it's important to allow societies like that who are happy and comfortable where they are to flourish and not impede upon them too much. But I think the doc's right that they don't fully explore that idea in this episode, that I'm kind of adding to that with some of my own personal experience.
No, I don't think it's as bad as they think it might be. I think Martin, he was programmed to be such a worrywart. I don't think it's that bad.
Mm.
I mean, somebody else is going to take out the slack. There's got to be more than one engineer. That woman dies. Who's going to... What are they going to do? Breed another engineer from a baby up? They have to have people on standby. No, I don't think it's any different than your job. Somebody quits. Somebody gets fired. Somebody's got to fill in until somebody else comes on.
Yeah, and this isn't really explored in the episode, but like your musician who's playing the piano there is good at math. You know, like you can't be a great musician and not be somewhat decent at math, because that's all music is math, and like it's sound in time. So you deal with math all the time in music, and you got to hit the keys in a certain pattern in a time. And so like that guy could probably fill in for the engineer until the engineer is grown, right? But is it the perfect society that they created? And I think that's kind of what they're getting at, is that it won't be perfection until... And if you leave, maybe we can't breed you to get your perfect genes for science. Like, we have to get these slightly imperfect. I don't know. The genetic thing really does bug me, but...
Yeah, a little bit. But anyway, you know, you guys have pretty much discussed this whole thing. Really, it's a very... I like that.
We've not actually said anything about the Troy leader relationship, whatever it is. Aaron, was it? I think it was
Aaron. Yeah.
Does anyone have any? Does anyone have not anything really. Other than apathy about this relationship?
I have complete apathy, especially after watching Violations, because this is the second episode in a row where they've completely over-sexualized Deanna Troi. And you had a ready-made character who you didn't over-sexualize the episode before in Riker, that you could have sent down, and the leader could have been a woman, and this it didn't have to be Troi. But yet again, Troi is just a sex prop for you to throw in when you want to have, you know, this type of situation. And it's just frustrating to me that she is only this thing.
Yeah. She did it, it's done.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a small frustration in this episode. And I didn't even notice it until I watched Violations and then this. Like, if I would have just watched this episode, this conversation wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so anyway, the planet's engineer, Hannah, believes that the Enterprise might be able to move the core fragment, but she needs to go up to the ship to do the work. And, of course, Martin is absolutely nuts about it. I think that's where I say he's overreacting. I mean, her being gone for a week or so, it's not going to cause any damage, is it?
I think he realizes, though, that they're behind. When he sees the starship in the sky and he's like, oh man, what do they have? this is going to ruin our society, because if she gets out, this is where the insidiousness that Doc was kind of talking about, where it kind of feels like slavery a little bit, comes in.
As soon as she finds out what's on the other side, she's going to tell others about it, and they're all going to want to leave.
Yeah.
Is that what he's afraid of?
That's what it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I mean, I'm going to just use an analogy here from DS9, but it's like, all of the Jem'Hadar have complete free will, and they are very loyal to the Founders, but you're also on the white as well, that will kill you and that we can withdraw it at any moment. It seems... why they're not allowing them to go off and save the planet. And the thing I just don't get here is that there is no alternative. There is, you know, people are getting upset about her. Oh, she's going to have to be off the planet for a couple of days. We're going to have to get people down and engineers fixing things. Look, there is no alternative. The planet either gets destroyed, and you're worrying about the fact that this society is so fragile that it can be perturbed. I mean, I just don't see it. I really don't. There's actually another... There's that episode in DS9, right, where, you know, Sisko gets thrown in the box. So they crash down on the planet, there's a dampening field, and they've got those people basically living as space Amish up, led by that woman. And if my memory serves right, they show everyone that she was basically trapping them there, and then everyone kind of agrees that they should still stay and they should still work for the common cause. And right. I don't understand why. It's almost as if the society that she builds, which is based entirely on lies and keeping people restricting their freedom explicitly, seems less fragile than this society that was built and these people have been genetically engineered in order to fulfill every single part of their desires. And I don't understand why this society is so fragile.
That's why I say they... but it's only the one guy who believes it's that fragile. Martin. I don't think Aaron really does. He's probably taking what Martin says, and yeah, it's possible, whereas Hannah doesn't believe it at all, one bit. So,
or if she does, she's so selfish that it doesn't matter.
Doesn't care. Yeah. Well, you're right. I don't think she cares, because she's willing in the end to pretend that there's some kind of crack in their armor, and that, well, we have to leave anyway.
She was willing to take them all off the planet at that point.
Yep.
Actually, by the way, I think that the story would have been a lot better had it been the personal story of this woman, and you actually could dig into the fact that she's conflicted as to whether or not she wants this to succeed or not. She's seeing this wonderful technology. She's come up with great ideas. She's bouncing off Geordi, and she's behaving in a way that she's never had the experience of on the planet, because they've never had to solve these problems. They then solve the problems, but she's in two minds about it. She's actually thinking, well, I'm now going to go back to my old way of life, and it's going to be boring again. So then she's in two minds as to whether or not actually she should make the next step and actually break their society and require them to be taken out from this kind of boring old stale world. And then Geordi can be in there, and he can say, look, you know, you're causing this yourself. You're stepping over the lines. You're making decisions for others. You're being selfish. But I just never feel that they're really discussing these issues. And I don't know. I mean, I've rambled on a lot on this, but there's so much good that you could have got out of this. And I just feel that they quite, you know, they can like stumble around it. And actually, to be honest with you, I'm a lot more interested in this scientist woman than I am about the leader. And I think that the way that she interacts and how her eyes are opened with interaction with outsiders is a much more interesting story, especially because she believes she's superior to the other scientists that are out there. I think that's a much more interesting story to focus on than whether or not the leader's eyes are open because, hey, Troy's hot. I don't care about that story.
Yeah, that B story or A story, whatever you want to call it.
I'm afraid it's an A story.
It's a little weak. See. I think the scientist story is definitely the more important story, and you're probably right that with the sensibilities of today, we would break away from our main characters a little bit and probably explore her. And we'd probably even open up this episode, if we were writing this story today, with that scientist doing something awesome and within the culture of her society at the time. And then these guys coming in and helping her solve this big problem, but her being a huge part of that. I think that we would see a completely different take of this if we were doing it today, but we're not. And so we have to take this for what it was. It was a product of its time. Our main characters are going to get the main stage. And here we sit.
Okay. Here we sit. I moved the notes over here, yeah. I don't know where I'm at, guys. I'm sorry.
It's like, Gabe, you're not the only one.
Right at the end. So, they saved the planet after the crack in the Earth, and...
Oh, well, okay, hold on. There was one thing I wanted to mention, that they said the... It could withstand a, like, 7-something on the Richter scale.
I think it's 8.7.
Because then during, while the boy is playing the piano, they do have a Moab quake.
Yep.
Get it?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Chris? I get it.
Moab quake?
Maybe it's something that I didn't quite catch because I'm kind of too... Well, frankly, I'm bad at reading people. But I thought they should have played up a bit of the arrogance of the leader a bit more. Because I did like the fact that they said, look, you know, by the way, Stellar Fragment coming along, you're probably going to be wiped out. And he goes, nope, not us. 8.7. We can handle 8.7 on the Richter scale. He's like, no, it's going to be more like 50. And it's, oh, okay.
Oh.
I kind of like that interaction, and I'm afraid Data was only able to say it's going to be vastly, you know, superior than 8.7, or it will vastly succeed 8.7 on the Richter scale.
As far as Aaron, do you think maybe he's not very much of a leader because the measurement, the true measure of a leader, is someone who can handle problems, and they have no problems?
I think he's a terrible leader. I really do. I think.
He ain't much of a leader at all, really.
Yeah, what actually does he do? Is he able to convince anyone to stay?
Nothing.
Is he able to to provide leadership and to solve the things that are... You know, I would assume, by the way, a leader has to be able to handle the unexpected. You know, just
things unexpected.
Could be crazy. And this isn't that unexpected, right? This is basically the situation that this particular quote-unquote leader is faced with. So he turns up to work on Monday, and they say, hey, by the way, your plan's going to be destroyed. And he goes, oh, but we'll fix it so it won't go wrong. Okay. Now, that's the only thing he has to deal with. What? How does he turn that into an actual kind of like society-threatening problem? I don't... Yeah, I'm not in love with him or his leadership ability.
No, it's hard too. He's not much of a leader at all. Okay.
Anyway, I'll
so
go quiet
they decide.
Now.
Well, they not only they think they can move the stellar fragment out of the course. Maybe they just enhance some of the attractor emitters, and well, they can't. Well, they can and they can't. They can to a certain extent. They get it 1.21 degrees shift in its course, but then they have to enhance their own biosphere, and of course we need 50 people to beam down to do that. Oh, jeez, it just gets worse, doesn't it?
By the way, I'm going to put money on that if they were able to divert the core by 1.27 degrees, or whatever that was, they could have diverted the planet by more, and probably got it out of the way. Now, I accept that it might have got hot for a couple of months before you're able to push it back onto its orbit.
Hold on. No.
What?
Wait a second. You can move a planet. They can move the ship can move a planet.
Well, but hang on. The stellar core is going to be it's going to be multiple times the size of the planet. So what we're talking about here is that stellar core, planet big stellar core, much bigger.
Much bigger.
I would have thought. Did I give you the size of it? I thought they gave you the size of it.
Okay. So if Earth was somehow moved just 1.21 degrees off, isn't that going to totally screw us up?
1.21 gigawatts!
Yes. 1.21 gigawatts!
It all depends on the angles and stuff, but it's at least a possibility they didn't discuss.
No, because it sounds... I don't know, I mean... This planet is in it where it's supposed to be. Moving it sounds like a really bad idea.
But the thing is that if we think that the stellar core is like the sun is many times bigger than the Earth and many times heavier. So why did you move the small thing? And the small thing happens to be the planet in this case.
Here's another question then. Answer this. The core is not going to hit the planet. It's just going to pass by the planet.
Yeah.
Why is that such a big deal?
Gravity.
Causing what?
Well, there are a couple of things, right? It's that there are, it actually can be. Okay, they reckon they claim that it's going to be like an earthquake, right? That's what they kind of suggesting. So they're not suggesting that the radiation is going to completely wipe them out and kill them. So I think the two things you have to be worried about as the sun kind of passes by. One is the radiation on it, and that would include heat. If you get too close to the sun, you're going to burn, and you're going to get turned into basically you'll be dead. Too much radiation coming from the sun for you to absorb, and this is before you get into the idea that also you're going to get heat that's going to burn you. But they don't seem to suggest it's going to be the radiation, and they usually like whenever there is radiation issues, they usually like telling you that we've got gamma rays that we've only got another 20 seconds of exposure to before we'll all be dead. So they don't mention that. The only one I can think of is that what they're talking about here is that as you get close to something as large as a planet like that, you are going to be pulled over towards it because of gravity. Now, I'm not entirely sure why that would cause an earthquake. It should just perturb you from your orbit, which will probably just mean you're going to get extremely cold because you're going to be further away from the sun than you should be. And you're going to have extremes in temperatures because what you're likely to be doing is instead of going around the sun in a nice way, you'll be going in and out and in and out and in and out. There'll be lots of variation between how far your maximum and your minimum distance from the sun is. That's all I've got.
Okay. So they were able to do that. The core fragment was moved off 1.21 degrees using 1.21 gigawatts. They almost burn out half the ship. Of course, as the emitters start dropping offline, they couldn't move it until they really get a lot of power into it. And then an emitter pops off, but they're still able to move it. And then a second emitter pops off, and they're still able to move it.
Well, remember, I mean, as you're pushing, right, it's the acceleration that is causing you that's the effort. It's not the moving per se. So as you're pushing a car, it's not the actual pushing of the car that's hard. It's the getting it from zero to 2 meters a second. That's the hard part. Keeping it 2 meters per second is fine. So maybe as they were pushing it, as they were overcoming this kind of like acceleration, one of them popped, but then they still had enough energy to keep it moving.
Okay. And once they do, they shut off the emitters and
everything on the ship turns on. Nobody has to replace any light bulbs that may have burnt out. Nothing. So that's a good thing. All right, they do it. They are able to fortify the shields there, and everybody is good, except for the 23 people who want to leave the planet. And you guys have already discussed the whole reason of not leaving or leaving the planet, so I think we're good there, too. So, if it wasn't for the fan in back of Chris, I'd wonder if he was frozen. There we go.
Here.
You're there. So, is there anything else we need to discuss? As I run through my notes real quick to make sure I didn't miss something. Oh, and I do like what Geordi says. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if the solution to your problem was done by a blind man who never would have existed on your planet?
I think I mentioned it to begin with. It's a relatively nice thing to have. Also, at the same time, it's relatively pedestrian that you'd expect in any of these discussions. And I don't think they touch upon this enough. I would have been interested to see what actually this particular Masterpiece Society has actually managed to create in terms of innovation in science or even, you know, progress in the arts forward. My prejudice that I come into this episode with is that these guys are stunted pretty much across the board, and having an actual discussion as to the value of that community would have been nice.
But they're happy. That's all that matters. They're happy. Okay, yeah, well, I mean, if my dog ever finds out that they can have a better life besides just laying there and enjoying us petting them once in a while, they just don't understand. They don't know what else is out there, I mean, you know, but anyway. I guess that's it, guys.
Okay, I'm happy for it to be it.
You're happy for
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I feel like we stretched this one to its limits.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think Doc's rating might go up just because of the good discussion.
Actually, I have enjoyed that discussion.
Yeah, it's a great one, actually. It's been one of the better ones that we've had. So thank you, Chris. You brought that to
not
us.
Sure, the rating's going up.
No. I don't know about that. Okay, well, anyway, so this brings us to our final thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being... nah, the best. Chris, you go first. This time you get to go.
This is
first.
A 10. This is a perfect 10. No.
1 to 5.
Okay, Brian.
I believe that this episode does everything that I want a Star Trek episode to do. There are some weaknesses, yes. Do they fully flesh out or compel me to watch every single minute? I think they do. They don't answer any questions. But they present a whole bunch of really relevant, I think, good questions to ask. As we sit in a society now where we're looking at a history that we, like Picard, don't like. We look at things that we don't like. We have to ask ourselves, is it worth destroying an entire culture to save this one person? And like Picard, I think ultimately, yes, it is worth saving the one person. And you never know how many people you'll save from that, as we kind of talked about through this. I think it is important to preserve culture, but we have books, we have video, we have lots of things to preserve culture and preserve history. But the cool thing about culture is that it's always growing. And while the anthropologists want to look back and say that that is beautiful and that is wonderful and we destroyed it, there's nuance. We can incorporate the good things, get rid of the bad things, constantly reflect on our society, constantly think like Picard. Have we destroyed something that was good? Have we taken the good things from it before we destroyed it? And I think those are questions that Star Trek wants us to ask. And this is why I watch Star Trek these episodes right here, like this, that make me look at my own society and think about my own society maybe in a slightly different way, or a more nuanced way, or a more fair and balanced way. This is why I love Star Trek. And so I have to say, for the progression that this episode presents, but also for the reflection that it presents, that this is a 4-star episode for me. I really love it. I think it's good. It's not the best. It has its flaws, but it does what I want Star Trek to do. It's good Star Trek, this episode.
Okay. Doctor.
So I would have,
give me the one.
I would have really loved to have watched that episode that Chris watched, because
it was this one, man.
It's really not. I don't know. I think I've got, maybe it's a personal thing. Maybe I have too many hang-ups on this particular episode for things that they do during the episode. I have a big problem about how they try to phrase the ending. I have big problems in terms of how they broad stroke the questions that they ask, and I don't feel like there's enough nuance presented in order for it to be an actual intellectual discussion that's worthy of anything other than a 2-second rebuttal. I have really enjoyed this episode of The Battle Bridge, discussing this with Chris and Lou, and yeah, maybe I will up my score. I fear that maybe Chris doctors score a little bit after my whining, and I hope that's not necessarily true. I find that there are big flaws with this episode, and I just don't feel like it's able to really capture kind of my interest, and I feel like there is something there under in the background that they're dancing around, but I don't know, for whatever reason I just wasn't able to really to be brought in on this one. I've done 2 ones in a row, and I was originally coming in with another one for this because I really do not appreciate it, but I do see that this is a better episode than things like Violations, and there is something that was at least attempted. So I'll bring it home with a 2 out of 5. I don't like this episode, but I suppose it's not complete garbage. How about you, Lou?
2 out of 5.
Don't come in at a 3, because that would be we originally start off the episode me saying that it's the worst thing ever, Chris saying it's the best thing ever, and you saying you're in the middle, and we're all going to be between plus or minus 1 of each other. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, I guess it would be, but hold on. I'm having a problem with my setup here. I had 2 monitors that froze on me, and I don't know why. But I think I was able to fix it. Okay. So, the human element for me. I'm glad they're human, because if they were alien, I think this would have been a whole different story. Because could we have actually taken them if they wanted to leave? We didn't even discuss that. What do you guys think about that? What if they weren't human? What if there were some aliens that just wanted to get off their planet? Would we still be willing to let them go?
I'm sorry, in my mind, the thing about as soon as they become alien, the story doesn't become about like a common humanity. It becomes about imposing your cultural norms onto others, and I do think that that completely flips the story. And I think at that point, although I'm a kind of guy that would argue for a certain amount of universality in how you treat certain people, I think that there are other things that you should respect more when you're dealing with other cultures. So I do think it changes the dynamic slightly, yes.
Okay, Chris?
I don't think I could answer that any better than the doc just did.
Okay, good.
Snip that and have that sent to me, because that'll be a good... that's a good sound. I'll have that as my mobile phone ring.
I've been trying to give you clips all night. I got my kids to say Doc's the best like 3 different times.
No kidding. It didn't say one time did I hear one kid say that Lou's the best. However, since they all thought I was the Doc,
it transfers to
they
you.
They still thought I was the best. Yeah. Is my video frozen?
Nope.
No.
Oh, really? Because yours is, Chris. Like I said, I had a glitch. I'm even hoping this thing is still recording.
Chris is dancing.
Oh, good. I don't see him anymore, so I'm going to let it go. If I try to fix it...
Oh, wow. Chris, get your clothes back on.
Yeah, Doc doesn't like that. I tried that once, and he wasn't interested. Okay, so, anyway, would we be talking about the same thing? I don't think so either. So, what do we do? We help them avoid a catastrophe, but we may have caused catastrophic consequences to their society with the loss of their 23 puzzle pieces. However, it's not that bad. I don't think it's that bad. They've probably figured out a way to adapt until replacement personnel were born and raised. I think they have people on standby. They have to. It only would make sense.
So is that people on standby as in ready for Nookie at a moment's notice, because in 19 months we're going to need to start training these children?
Yeah, right. No, I think they have plenty of replacement personnel. They have to have people on standby for... I mean, what if somebody wants a vacation day to go onto the other side of the dome? You know, they have to have somebody who take their place, or someone's just not feeling well and they stay in bed this day. I don't think it's that bad. I think Martin was just programmed to be the gloom and doom because that's what the masters wanted him to be. Ooh, bad choice of word. But still, the masterpieces, the artist of this society, wanted him to be the doom and gloom so that everybody would believe him, I think. I just don't think it's that bad. I like it, though. I don't think it's really up with Chris as far as one of the better stories. But, Doc, I don't see a one. I don't even really see a two. It's, for me, it's more middle of the road. So I'm sorry. But, yeah, you pegged that one, Doc. It is a three for me. Okay.
Sounds good.
Is everything okay with it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Chris, I think last time we forgot to ask you if anybody wants to get a hold of you to bring you on their show, which really they should. Where can they contact you?
At CarnivoreJ on Twitter. You can DM me there.
Okay. And we're all carnivores, right?
Well, not everybody. And I respect
that's true,
that.
Not everybody. Yeah, that's good. Okay, James.
What's the J stand for?
Johnson.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm a carnivore of my family. Which makes me a cannibal. Cannibal J? Doesn't have the same ring to it.
No.
Cannibal J. Okay. Okay, then. Let's see where I have you coming on next. I have you for the perfect mate. The perfect mate. So everyone join us next time as we review episode 14 of season 5, and that's Conundrum. And we shall have on Kieran McDuff.
I mean,
otherwise known as Chris.
I mean, sorry, this Chris was right when he said it's basically him and Kieran that are holding up the show.
Yeah. We're not holding up
pretty much
the two main guests.
Yeah, you're right.
Good people.
Pretty much.
Good people.
We do have Matt DeGeer coming up. We have one for Colin. We have three for Colin. And four for Colin. Jeez, Colin, what are you doing to us? I'm kidding. And then we have Fur Bob coming on after a... Well, he was here for Disaster, right? Let's see. Blair. How about Blair? We haven't had... We haven't had Blair on for quite a long time, have we?
No, probably over a year.
Yeah, so he will be on in the upcoming shows, and we have at least one more with the Klingon.
Stricken with total amnesia.
I don't know who any of you are.
Don't even remember who I am.
The crew struggle to find their true identities.
You and I could be married.
And discover they're in the midst of an alien war.
We've been ordered to cross into Lycian territory and destroy their central command.
There could be thousands of lives at stake.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good night, and everyone, take care, and good night to you, too.
Good night, everyone.
Last week, they couldn't say goodnight at all. James even said, I don't know why after you say goodnight, why should I say goodnight, too? And now they step over each other. Perfect.
Good night.
Night.
This is the last time I'm telling you, boy. Get the hell out of here.
That's...